folks. Welcome to the Musky 360 Podcast. A JJ.
Gee.
What are you doing, buddy?
Just got home from work at the Musky Shop.
How about you? Just got home from work. Just got off the water.
You just got off the water.
I'll tell you what, for all the complaining the last few weeks I've done, right? Oh, it's too cold. Buddy, I'll tell you what, it's magical now. There's a heat wave.
That's what I was going to ask you about, if you got to wear shorts today or not.
I'll tell you what, it's a weird feeling, though, when it just happens, that transition. And I'll tell you what I was reminded, to be honest with you, today on the water, reminded me of typically when you have a really hard change in things, when fish are trying to figure out what they're going to do, that just complete stratification of things in the water column, right?
Okay.
Flat out, few weeks, I mean, it's been cold water temps. All this stuff, it's still cold water temps. It takes more than one day to change that by sure. Time, right? But those big changes, those days where everybody's kind of going, oh, my chair's creaking, sorry. Those days that everybody's kind of going, oh, what's going on? Or can't really, it's hard to dial in on. And it's so easy to identify if you really know your electronics. You're going, there are bait fish 1 foot down. There are bait fish 20 feet down. They're everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, I was reminded yet again, those transition days, they can be tough. It was hard to get a bite. Finally got it done. Don't get me wrong, right? But it was struggle bus for a long time because, like, walking out, you know, you get so dialed in, it's almost rinse and repeat, right? It was like, oh, goodness. There was just day after day after day of, like, Groundhog's Day. It felt like, okay, we're going to the same stuff. We're hitting it, same bait, same everything. Oh, boom, there's the fish. Oh, got him or missed him. Or, you know what I'm saying? Just like the pattern was so dialed in. And then you hit this transition day where, yesterday morning it was dialed in. Today it was completely different animal. Just a completely. And that's always a good reminder where you go, okay, you got to go and do something else. But to know that that's taking place, you have to at least be paying attention.
Yeah.
You know, and that was it. Going, okay, it's not the same. Really need to mix it up. Need to make some changes and make them quick to get something to happen during that bite window. You know, because you got a narrow window. But if you don't identify that the pattern has changed or is changing, because the pattern I was on is gone, now I've got X, Y, and Z bite window to figure it out. You know, and that it's always a thing where you go, okay, you got to stay on your toes. And today was a good reminder of that, of, you know, no matter how good it's been, it's going to go away, and you better logically figure it out. And I bring it up where, you know, later in the day, everything's been tight, tight, tight to bottom, tight, tight, tight. And later in the day, it's like, you know, after you get one in, I'm seeing stuff moving a foot down. I actually saw something wake, you know, it's suspended over 20 feet, but something, you know, kind of wake the water. I went, well, that's no bait fish. You know, so it's interesting of those transition days. Just keep that in mind, especially go ahead.
Huh? Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, like 2 days ago, you're probably dealing with frozen guides, and now today you're dealing with a bug hatch. You know, it's like,
I don't know about
more crazy
that,
than that.
I have, yeah, well, dude. You know, it's it's crazy. I mean, it's one of those days you got the front door open with the screen, the back door. It feels like it's unbelievably nice, right?
Yeah, so that's awesome, though. Yeah.
But in comparison, boom, it's gonna change. Yeah. just freaking keep on getting jealous there. Just keep it jelly belly there, Wisconsin boy. No, it's not. I'll tell you, it's funny, and this is the deal with not knowing what to wear. You know, you're a little scared. I could have worn my shorts, but I was terrified because I've been so cold. But anyway, you know that.
We're sorry. The number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Sorry about that, folks. It was blowing up. Are you? Hello? Your car's extended warranty. So anyway, it wasn't that.
Yeah, help you.
It was the purveyor of EBS, if you know what I mean. Oh. They're calling, but that. Oh. Now, to that point of you know, keep your mind open to what's going on there, because it wasn't what I thought it would be. You know, I thought, this is going to turn into, turn into maybe in my first knee-jerk reaction is, okay, they're just going to be higher in the water column, but where they were, right? That's a pretty logical thing. Quickly not seeing it, it's like, okay, this just went from a really tight structural bite to, oh, suspended over 20 feet of water on bait schools, you know, in just a matter of half a day, literally, you know. So something to look at anyway. Done with the soapbox, Jay. The comings and the goings. It's happening. Believe it or not. What is today? We're into the heart of February, right?
Yeah, I believe it's the 3rd.
We're in there. We got just what? February, there's like 9 days in, I think. Like January, yes, like a few days ago was like January 74th is what it feels
like.
Yeah,
it never ends, right.
Now, February just blows by and we're right into getting close for everybody. But you did have a couple new things that look like the Bondi dumped the proverbial load.
That's true. We did get a box or two from John Bondi last Friday. So got some Royal Orbas in both sides, got some originals. That was the bulk of the order. Mm-hmm. He's making a lot more for us. That took a long time to get that order. He's just been behind.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a lot of stuff in today. We got 22 boxes of Savage gear, so if anybody's been waiting for anything specific, it probably came in today, except for the alien eels. That's the only thing that I was hoping would show up.
They were on back. A lot of that was on back order from the manufacturer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
if you yeah, got your, you need your Barbit tube, or you need your Wake Snake. Yeah. Well, we got Wake Snakes. We got 3D bats. I'll tell you little secret. Don't tell anybody.
Okay.
Little secret on the Savage gear is we got a little thing cooking there that you guys are going to see that is coming out. Danny worked on it. Mads worked on it. I think we actually talked to the one time we did the podcast and Mads is in like Thailand or something.
Yeah.
He talked about it. He probably couldn't understand it, but we tried.
It's cool. I've seen pictures and video of it. Let's just put it at that.
Gonna have some cool stuff there. So that should be pretty soon. What else here?
Well, we got some more Smutley dogs in today.
Nice.
Those take a while to get made. Mm-hmm. Up by your neck of the woods. And you'd be interested in this, Steve. We got some of those new Akuma line counter reels, and I think we got some even in left-hand models.
Did you get the, what is it, the Akuma cold water?
Yeah, the cold water LCs, I think they're called.
Are they new?
It's a new, they updated it late last year. So
the CW?
Like three. Yeah, I think so.
Hold on, let me see.
Okay. They're not expensive. Yeah, I'm not. It was kind of hectic getting everything processed before I left.
Okay, so you've got the. Oh, no. I've not seen these. Ooh, baby. The Akuma Convector low profile. Is that what you got?
Bear with me 1 second. No.
Have we ever talked about, because the convectors, I ran the convectors for a long time, but they were the size of something you would see on Wicked Tuna, right? They're just like gigantic round, they're good reels, but they're,
I just saw a trailer for that show the other day.
Wicked Tuna. I got a guy that fishes on the boat with me that sounds like listen, he listens too. He knows I'm talking about it, right? He's like, that's a piss of a muskie. You're like, what? What did you just say, Boston boy? That's the weird. It's just weird when you hear
Wicked Tuna.
Wicked musk. Wicked. You hear that?
The Wicked Strike. I love that. That's funny.
Yeah, you just don't put you don't put muskie fishing and the sound of that together. Maybe it's that way for you. I'm like, hey, man, look at that muskie. But nonetheless, the convectors were always rock solid. And here you go. The low count or low profile, boy.
This is called the Cold Water Line Counter Reel CWA models.
A reel. A.
So they're about $135, $140.
Okay. Is it like in between a low profile or is it just angular in the back? It's like.
right. It's not a round reel per se and it's not a low profile. Let's put it that way.
Ooh, so, somewhere in between.
Yeah.
No, those are both really, that's cool. Yeah, the Akuma stuff, you're not going to break it. Like I said, I don't know how that, maybe I just missed it 1 week, but in comparison to the, and we have the original round Akuma convectors. And if you're a lefty like me, that's hard to get your hands on left-handed trolling reels, but they have them, boy.
Yes, sir.
Anything else? Oh, Magnus.
Magnus coming, baby. Magnus is coming around the corner. We got a cool video next week.
Cool.
Called the Magnus, featuring SP.
Cool beans.
SP Tiger.
Cool beans, Jay.
We had a video come out last week, if you haven't gotten a chance to check out that 2025 new gear bid.
Bananas. Everybody watch that.
Yep. And got one tomorrow.
Cool.
Featuring yours, the old SP Tiger also. It's on the Spanky M9 crankbait. That new really cool crankbait from Spanky Baits.
Spanky Baits. Any word on the big ones?
No, still no word exactly.
Gotcha.
It's supposed to be soon. And Jim extended we have a sale going on right now, too. There's a lot of select clothing models that are 50% off right now on the website. So there's a banner on the homepage. Click on that. I think there's over 50 listings of different hoodies, T-shirts, hats, and different merch, some decals and stuff like that, too.
I hadn't looked there. Oh, you got that bunch of gloves. That's some gloves, good stuff. Yeah. Good deal. Check out, like I said, any of the dry stuff and the fish monkey stuff is that I'm into, or boys. Anyway, Jay, let's get into it. It's time. Okay. We got to do another Steve Stash here. We got so many questions. Well, if we miss you like between last week and this week, and I say we do another Stash next week, just keep it fun here and try to cover. If you got your questions, send them. We got the Stash winner from last week. We'll do it again here in a minute, but let's get through them, Jay.
Okay.
Zach. Steve and Jay Bird, been using Phantoms and Glide Baits for many years on flowages and small river systems. Just recently got into using big bass-style swim baits like the Viper from Livingston and others. Question is, I'm having trouble working these with my musky setup because I feel like I'm working them too fast. Wonder what rod and reel setup I should go with to work these slower. Let me know your thoughts. So, when it comes to... And he mentioned like the Livingston bait, there's also like the Savage has one, Livingston has one. A bunch of baits I'll call like automatic gliders, where they're jointed in the middle and they kind of glide on their own. You don't have to do the snaps to them, right?
Lipless, right.
Not lipless, but
yeah.
Well, I guess.
You know, like Viper, like the Foreplay. Yeah.
Are you calling it a lipless crank? Because I'm kind of going it. I mean, really, I don't want to use those like a typical jerk bait and use my rod tip. I just want to use short turns of the handle.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And that's the action that tends to work better for me. Where, you know, you take a Phantom. I got one. He said Phantom, so I turned around and grabbed one off the wall. Got one, man. You know, you take a 6-inch Phantom or a standard Phantom or a Hellhound or what. So you said Smutley. Name it. Glide bait. That's kind of in your standard musky glide baits, or the classics you think of when it comes to a musky glide bait. You know, you're better off using your rod to articulate those with these split in half glide baits. Like I said, Viper, what do you say, Free Play on Savage? Who else makes one? They're mostly like mass produced lures. I'm trying to think of who does this. Jay, any other jointed ones?
Savage Foreplay, Savage.
Other than Savage, said that like 9 times.
Other than Savage, kind of a hard bait, jointed swim bait kind of a deal.
I don't think. I can't think of whatever. There's others, but Zach's asking the question, there's a ton of these in bass fishing, and there's some very notable ones. Very expensive. There's some bass glide baits that make musky baits look cheap. Right, if you get bored, go poking around on the Bay of E, and you'll see it. I'm looking at gliders here, and I'm not seeing anything else up in the shop. But it's not a traditional
kind of like MM26 style.
Yeah,
stuff
there too. You go. There you go.
Yeah,
okay. MM26. That's another one at the shop. But you know, those are like custom glide baits, right? And we don't even have like the Viper, so the Viper's not listed under glide baits, for example. And so I
guess Phantom Viper?
No, the Livingston Viper.
Oh.
Right. Yeah. So the Vipers, we don't have that categorized under glide baits, which I guess we could. And then he's Free Play. Oh my goodness. No more. My phone, people. I apologize. Anyway, those are side-to-side glide baits. There's a ton of the bass baits that do the same thing, just to get it over with and get to the point. If it's a segmented side-to-side glide bait, use your reel. You're going to get way better action out of it. Those are typically designed for anglers to do that. So if you can control your reeling speed, you can control the motion of the bait. You're using the reel. You're not using the rod tip as pickup, right? So when I have a client on the boat and say we're fishing the Viper, turn. So each, figure out with your reel, regardless of speed or setup, how much you need to turn the reel to get it to go to the side one time, right? And now we're just using chunky, if you will, stuttering reeling to get a left to right response.
Sure.
And that's the trick. And so something else to say about these baits, I've said about the Viper, the Free Play, any of that stuff, the MM26 would probably fall into this category. I haven't done it with one yet, but they're great baits. Is they're hell of a good prop wash trolling bait. Because you can troll a glide bait with those. It's ridiculous. Right? So just the forward advance is getting a pretty pronounced left to right motion out of them, where like a traditional jerk bait, you'll get a little bit of stuff out, but you're not going to get a good left. You're not going to get that really pronounced left to right. And so those baits are creating a left to right with just a straight reeling motion, but use it in a chunky fashion, like partial handle turns are going to get you going there. What do we got? What's in the box? Austin, Steve and Jay, the podcast is amazing. Thank you both and everyone else involved for passing on the knowledge. Had a question for Steve. Been trying to do my research on my home water of, not going to say it, having trouble marking out some key areas on structure, being the majority of the lake has tight brake lines. Any help would be greatly appreciated. Thanks in advance. So, and where you're at in West, by God, that you're on, think of this, it's just southern reservoir and there's really tight plunging brake lines, right?
Okay.
And you know, very, there's a lot of verticality in the sides. Now this goes for anybody. You go, well, I don't fish a southern reservoir, I fish a Wisconsin inland lake. The same thing when you go, if everything looks the same, right? We're looking for the small details more so than something that stands out like some gigantic major point.
There right? you go.
So people will look at a map and they'll have this epiphany. I know structure. And they point at a point. Their fingers on, look at that. Well, yeah. We all saw that also, sir. What you have to do is you have to dig into finer detail. So the finer the detail that we're digging into, right, the more difficulty we're going to have debunking or confirming that the muskies are using it, right? So bullshit, a hyper-complex body of water, let's say like the Willow in Wisconsin, right, Jay, Willow flowage. That's a pretty complex body of water for Wisconsin, for inland, right?
Yeah, it is.
There's sure. a lot going on. I'm just... pulling out of my head here. In comparison to what's something that's just super bowl shaped, Jay, and boring. Whatever.
No, we got those lakes too. Yeah.
No, I didn't know if you had one off the top. I'm saying it just so somebody could look on a map. Just random. What's a real bowl shaped lake? I'm thinking out here. Bulger. You know, not a lot. I mean, there's stuff or something that's just really bowl shaped. There's a million of those lakes, but I just can't pull one out of my head right now. You know, you have the same problem. So super complex, no complexity. You're trying to dial in where there's not these like dummy, okay, there's the reef, there's the point, there's the hump, right? So the more of something you have, the more you got to dial in on what is important. So I find that lakes that are repetitious are the hardest to break down. Now, when I'm breaking down repetitious structure, things that come into mind quickly to eliminate a lot of them. Okay. Seasonality. What side of the lake is on? Is it theoretically warmer in one section? So if we have two, let's say we have two vertical structural elements, right? And just for clarity, like the verticality of the vertical nature of this would be, you know, they go from zero to, say, 20 feet. And that happens in the span of, always say, like 10 to 15 feet from the shoreline. So it's very quick. Sometimes it's even quicker than that. But when we're breaking that down, we can look at a few different factors, such as, you know, exposure to the sun. Is it slightly warmer, slightly cooler? Now, that tends to play in the spring quite a bit, but it can play year round, right? Is it associated with rock in the winter? So rock structures, winter and fall, tend to hold more fish because that's another thermal energy thing. There's geothermal heat transmission through stone, blah, 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 blah. Right. Okay. Let's say we have this structure. Is there entering water in one section, whereas in another section there's not? So is there a runoff creek? That would get my attention more so than something that is devoid of that. Right. Okay. So is there something extra? Those are obvious things, right? So and so when we're comparing things that to the untrained eye all looks the same, look for the next obvious thing, right? So it's orientation on the body of water, you know, what the structure is comprised of. Because I've seen somebody's water where, like, they look on the map, they look all the same, but the composition changes tremendously. So there's that. Anything that's entering. Now we need to be observant. Is there cover associated with that? So I've fished plenty of vertical rock walls that have nothing, just the rock wall themselves. Now I've also fished them on the same body of water that have the vertical structure and there's standing timber. Well, okay. If all things are the same, the addition of timber or laydowns or things of that nature could be possibly helpful. So I'm going to pay attention to that. So structurally, we do look at cover if all things are the same, right? Current also plays. You know, if you're on a reservoir, how far are these areas away from channel, current, things of that nature? Okay. Now, from a purely structural standpoint, looking at what is adjacent to them. So if this is an exit off of the main highway, let's say most reservoirs are dammed rivers, how far is that vertical structure? How far is that area from a main thoroughfare, a main channel, something that muskies are going to use structurally to move out through the entire body of water? Right. So for the lack of a term when it comes to reservoir, the original channel is what I would call like core structure. That is the main interstate. Everything adjacent to that is secondary, right? So they use the main channel as a way to traverse and they get off at different exits because different exits provides different things, right? However, you'll look at the surrounding structural elements and you'll find, okay, this vertical rock wall is the same as the one that's 400 yards away. However, the channel is closer to it, or there's something that leads things in. So don't look at just the shoreline complexity. Look at the immediately adjacent complexity. Okay. That's the best way. If you take cover out of the equation, even, you can look at the surroundings. So don't just look at don't imagine here's where my boat setting, I'm throwing at it. What's the bigger picture? And the less complex, the more things are the same, the bigger we need to look out, right? We need to look out further and go, what differentiates this section from the other section? And that'll help you narrow in quickly, you know, because like I said, it's a moving scale of bowl-shaped lake and super complex lake. How do you find that? You have to look in the surroundings opposed to your typical or just a very central run-of-the-mill lake. There's a gigantic bar. There's an island. There's a hump. That's all she's got. Well, where do you think they're going to be? You know, that's it. So you got to look a little bit deeper and look at how those things interconnect. What we got, Jay? David. What makes someone a pro muskie angler? I've always wanted to be a guide. It's something I dream of down the road. But what makes someone a pro? Well, what's the definition of professional? Let's see. You work in a specified professional activity. That's it. So
it's the basis of your living financially.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, that's it. If you're doing it professionally, you're professional. That's about it. I don't think there's a board. There's not a board of directors or anything that said you were a pro. So there you go. As simple as that. That's it.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with it. Okay. Well, we got Mike. What are your top five tips for fishing small rivers, clear water lakes? Bonus. How do I manipulate, trick my wife into kids into wanting to musky fish? So there's three questions there. Top five tips for fishing small clear water lake. Oh, because like I said rivers. I just read it too fast. Top tips for a small clear lake.
Small clear lake.
Okay. We're going to fish below the level of light penetration. So if we don't have clouds, we don't have anything to minimize light penetration, we're going to fish deeper, right? And if it's a small body of water, we're going to kind of probably target mid-sized baits. There's going to be a giant or two giants in there, but the smaller, you know what I'm saying? You play to the statistical probability of how many giants are in there. So if you think it's a small lake, I'm not going to go out there with pounders, 24-inch suckers, looking for old jingle bells that everybody said they saw, you know. He's got bucktails hanging out of him everywhere, I'll tell you what.
His head was on one side of the boat and the tail on the other.
I saw him, he was vicious. You know, it's always something. It's like, come on, man, you know.
He was so big, he broke the hooks off my lure.
Exactly. No, you were just drunk and you hooked a rock. There he is! It's old Jingle Bells! Old Ironsides again! He bit me off. Be realistic about the size of body of water you're fishing on. Smaller lakes typically mean smaller forage. Okay, so we're going to pay attention to that. Clear water means level light penetration. The small body of water, medium-sized presentation is going to be my ticket most of the time. Again, clear the water. We need to be, you know, this goes to both. If it's small and it's clear, pay attention to the structure. Study the heck out of the lake map, right? You might be lucky where your small, clear lake is one of those lakes I was just talking about. It's got one point. Well, that's good. It's got one hump. Cool. I know they'll be there too. So you can dial in on that structure, which is overarching. But again, clear water. The clearer the water, the more structurally oriented we probably need to be, because they're going to tend to go deeper, which there's not not too many weeds past the littoral zone. So we're going to think about that. You know, I would also say this. I would not go, and we're talking clear, clear water. I'm not big on color, if anybody's never noticed, right? But in clear water, I'm definitely not going to throw some wild stuff, right? And you talk about things that can be, you know, we don't talk about the positivity of color or, you know, I try to make that choice simple where you just go throw whatever you want. But I'm not going to reach in for, you know, rainbow, funky, monkey, special, supreme, show color, glitter.
Yeah, the super fluorescent stuff. Right. The completely unnatural stuff is just like, right. Play the game and go natural in some aspect, you know. Like,
yeah, or basic. I mean, clear water, man, black and orange, never seen it do bad. You know, I mean, your basics. I mean, it's just like any other thing, but I'm like I said, you put me on stained or turbid, whatever. What color you do want? Doesn't matter. You know, somebody hands me the ugliest bait you've ever seen, it looks like a clown got ran over, I'm in. You know, it doesn't matter. It's like a bus full of clowns. Yep. I've seen it work. This color is called Clown Massacre. So that's something to keep in mind. And this just goes back to, you know, it's not the clear lake, but it's the small lake, right?
Yeah.
Is if you're on a genuinely small lake, you launch your boat and you're fishing all day, you don't have a lot of ground to cover, so you might as well cover it really thoroughly. Because I've seen it, and you've seen it too, Jay, guys going out there and freaking you know, running and gunning on little lakes. Like, we run to one end, then we run to the other, then you run over here. It's like, no, you can fish a pretty small lake. You could, let's say you're on edges, and you could fish a whole bowl shaped lake pretty fast, you know. What's that one, Jay? It's kind of like got a truncation in the middle. It's like, was it Sweeney? Or whatever. There's that one, like, it's like two bowls connected, like a passageway in between it. You know what I'm talking about?
Gilmore,
yeah.
Okay.
Like, that lake, like, I think of that immediately because it's basically two bowl-shaped lakes with a passage between them. Like, you could fish all of it on a trolling motor twice in a day.
Sure.
The whole thing. Not trying to burn anything, sorry, but you know, don't unless we know there's a pattern. You're seeing things on the major or minor, or it's this, that, or the other. Don't run around, right? Spend the time to dial in on it.
We have some friends that are really confined to that type of fishing because they don't have a lot of options or not, different opportunities in their you know. By their homes, so yeah. And they have the exact same situation. I mean, you said the light penetration thing, that's obviously critical. Uh-huh. You know, it's clear water and all that, but yeah, stop running and gunning and fish more thoroughly.
Yeah,
find the super good looking areas and fish thoroughly, fish effectively. Mm. Slow down and fish deeper.
And then the other thing, I don't know if it's five, don't care. Yeah, on small lakes, don't be afraid to just repeatedly come back to an area as fish are moving in and out structurally.
Yeah,
you know, right. People. Well, we already fished that. Oh, well,
right.
Yeah, and there's nowhere else to go. And his bonus question is, how do I trick the wife and kids into wanting to musky fish? The wife, not so much. The kids make it fun. Somebody that didn't quite have the funnest, but it wasn't like, hey, this is about fun. No, it is about war. Make it fun. And I've had people where they want to bring a kid, and I always tell them, I said, kids like to catch fish, right? And I don't know what the age is, but kids like to catch fish. So I always recommend if there's a younger angler on the boat that they're busky fishing, you know. Yeah. They got a leader on. They might throw a little bit, you know. Don't be afraid outside but the kiss of death. Maybe it's just me having a therapy session. The kiss of death with kids on the boat. Don't make them go all day. Right? This sucks. I hate this. I want to be playing Nintendo or whatever. You know, keep it short bursts. You know, I've seen a lot of guys that do it the right way where they say they've got them at camp or they're up in Wisconsin. They might go out and they pick the kids and the wife up for the last 2 hours at sunset. The best way to get the kids and the wives and the girlfriends, or if you want to, you know, take them all at the same time, whatever.
Pay attention to them because, the people that don't musky fish, they can get bored pretty quickly. So
right.
Just pay attention to their reaction and their stature. And it's just okay. Maybe it's time to go in, you know.
Yeah, and don't beat them to death with it. And like I said, with kids, they have a hoot. Little kids, you know, they definitely want to catch fish, and even the, you know, younger and, you know, until they're about freaking 13, 14, they don't care, you know. Keep it entertaining. Keep it, you know, don't be afraid to, I'm going to say it. Don't be afraid to go panfish for a little bit. You know? That's why I don't have kids. I wouldn't panfish. That was the decision. Like, nope, not doing it. No, sir. I would starve to death before I catch a bluegill. So,
okay.
Just a lake full of bluegill. No, I refuse. Herb. Hey, guys, this is Herb from Ohio. What's an acceptable or expected loss rate for hook fish? Have had some heartbreakers lately and need some help. Thanks again, Herb. Okay.
Acceptable loss rate?
He says acceptable or expected, which is interesting. Acceptable, zero. Expected, all over the map. I'll tell you, it depends. Okay, hooking. Let's start, because you can't just blather out some answer. 34%. No, not at all. What I see on the boat, and this is just my opinion, just my observation, and the caveat here, say I'm on a pattern. Like right when I started the show, talking about I'm on this pattern, right? I know the bait. I know what we're going to throw before I even leave the house until things change like it did today. I know what's going to happen. The only thing I don't know what's going to happen is how the angler in my boat's going to react. Right? I know we're going to have the opportunity. I know we're going to get the hit. I don't know how they're going to hit, and I don't know how the angler's going to react. So I've seen it where you have angler A on Tuesday, and you get 4 in the boat, 5 in the boat. Same pattern, same relative conditions. Angler B comes, and you get 0 in the boat, but you lost 3, right? Both are pretty action-packed days, but the end result differed. The difference was the angler, right? So how many do you lose? And it's experience-based. So I think the less experience that you have, the more that you lose. The more experience you have, the less you lose. Now, with that being said, Jay, it's a term in golf, I think. I don't know if it applies to everything. The yips.
The right? Yips?
The yips. Okay. Right? Yeah. It's kind of like you psyched yourself out in sports. Let me make sure I'm not just saying something stupid. Yeah. Right? Okay. Nervous twitching. Destroys conference. Excuse me. The yips, informal in sports. Nervous twitching, tension, destroys concentration, and spoils performance. Right? People tend to get the yips. I was just making sure I wasn't saying it out of context. People get this after they lose one. They lose confidence in themselves. Right? Okay. Have I ever lost a muskie? No. But if I had, I'm teasing. I've lost a ton of them. Biggest one I've ever hooked, I lost. I told it on the podcast. Right? Everybody's going to lose them. It's how you react on the backside. Now, if you've been doing this for a minute, you got some muskies under your belt, don't overthink it at all. It sounds like Herb's overthinking it, right? He's got the yips. He's afraid. Every time he hooks one, he's afraid he's going to lose it, so he's doing something different. Don't chalk up that one lost fish till you did something wrong. It happens. It's a fish. You don't know what angle it hit the bait. You don't know if his beak hooked, if you didn't see it. But let's say he hits out
precisely.
On the...
Precisely. Yeah.
Right. You don't know why you lost that fish if you've had success in the past. Now, I could sit here for 5 hours and tell you how to lose muskies. I can tell you what not to do, all this crap. But...
Yeah, it's absolutely going to happen.
But don't get...
If you fish enough, don't let it bring it down or let it change... Well, it depends on how you lost it.
Well, that's
it,
what I'm getting at. That's why I said if you've caught some, don't get the yips and you go, I lost one. Go back, double down, right? Don't worry about it. But if you're worried about it, guess what you're going to keep doing? You're in your own head now. And I've seen guys that are like, okay, they lose one and guess what they do the next one? They lose the next one because they're afraid of losing it. Jay, and it's I'll tell you, yeah. Not losing muskies, there's, okay, crazy talk here. Most people are going, no way. I've talked about on the podcast before, like, what muskies do if you just straight up free spool them and take the pressure off. I've talked about that forever ago. Guess what they do? Nothing, right? Nothing. You just kind of hanging out with the bait in your mouth. They're responding to the pressure in the weird pool. And so I've played with them. I am pretty lackadaisical about landing fish, right? I'm not hooting and hollering until he's in the net. I'm pretty icy about it, okay? A lot of times I'm playing air traffic control with everybody else in the boat. You know, I have my moments, but it's just like, okay, this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. Bam, 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 bam. Mm-hmm. Opposed to freaking, just calm, right? Control the chaos, control it, remain calm. And like I said, when you get in your own head, and I've done it, once you get in your own head on that first one, it's downhill from there. And you can't, on that first one, you can't lose it. Now let's go to the other side of the coin. Let's say you're new to it and you've lost 5. It's not the yips. It's something's wrong. Right? Because you didn't have the confidence to lose. Right? There's a difference. You've got to look at how you're fighting fish, what your hook set's like, and augment from there, which is a whole other podcast. Jay needs to remind me, and I'll forget in 5 minutes that I said that, but we should just do a whole thing about just all fighting landing fish. It's time. But but if you're new to it, you can't get in your own head, but you have to get in your own head, or you have to self-critique, right? Which is, I think, the benefit of having like a GoPro on the boat or something like that. It's not for you to film this awesome stuff. That's your game footage, right? Am I flailing? Am I panicked? Am I running around the boat? Do I, you know, there's very few of these fish that I can think of exactly two in my life that I couldn't control in some way, shape, or form, right? So a 37 is not going to force me to walk around the boat. Are we overcomplicating it? Right? Are we letting a 41 kick our butt because we're afraid of losing it? Or can we just get him in the bag and get it over with? Right? So need to approach it that way. What were we gonna say, Jay?
What do you think if there was one thing that you know you fished with, you know, 1,000 different anglers
from every level
over the years, from every walk of life and every level out there, right? It's just like if there's one thing that is commonly maybe done wrong that when people do lose fish, what do you think that would be?
Freaking out,
pulling too hard.
No. Okay. You're adding to it. No, freaking out. That's it.
Okay.
That's it. And I have guys on the boat that are never seen a muskie in their life. Oh, great example. Great example of this. And the guy even got a funny hat on. He's a real nice guy. There's Kraken right when we put the Kraken out last year. Right? That client catches that big one on the Kraken. And I tell everybody it's like the second or third cast he's ever made muskie fishing. Right?
Wow.
Remember that video and he's got the big sun hat on?
Vaguely, yeah. Yeah.
Throws it out there. I'm literally just a bit into showing him how to work it. You know, he picks up on it fast. He obviously had angling experience before. He's never seen a muskie or he's seen a video, but he's never seen one in person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Boom. Big fish. And I'm notorious. I always go, big fish, big fish, big fish, big fish, big fish. Calm down. I say that about every one of them to get it into people's head quick. Don't overplay them because people just muscle with 32. Yeah,
play them light
because people are just right. And I'm trying to get to people to listen to me because if you listen, we're gonna have a better thing. Dude's like, I'm good, cool. All right, he's under the boat. Turn the rod, cool. Turns the rod. Okay, it's running to the front. Turn it. Watch out for the drawing motor. Cool. He's calm. Right? He's calm as they come.
Mm-hmm.
And we net it, and it's a big fish. It's a real one. And that guy was calm as they come. On the flip side of the coin, I fish with people that have fished a ton and still freak out. And they're surprised they got a follow. They're shocked they got hit. They're hooked up to a fish and all they're no longer cognizant of their own actions and what they're doing with. I don't know what to do with my hands.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
You're saying now. Okay.
So don't freak out. I've never seen it work out well where people are just fired up. And it's just like, I'm icy when it comes to, I've got one of these things, I'm icy cold about it. You know, I might be barking. I might be a little elevated. I'm definitely feeling it, but I'm controlling my adrenaline hit or my excitement until we get in the net and it's all over with. So just calm. Don't, you know, react to the fish. That's all you're there to do. Right? That's it. And the freak out in whatever form or shape the freak out takes is bad. Right?
Okay.
That's the thing. So some people, I've seen it all. I you asked that, like, things that I've seen. imagine you set the hook on a fish on say like a crane bait, right? And you don't have a lot of experience in your boat. And you go, he's not hooked well. And then they hit him again before you can get the words out of their mouth. And guess what? You got a crane bait with straightened hooks. Fish was hooked fine. But they freaked out and they did something they didn't need to do. And it's often not what we do. You know, it's not what you didn't do, it's what you did. Does that make any sense? Like, you could have done nothing and it would have worked out, but you overthought it and you did this. And now the same thing goes for the yips. If now you're worried about which way was he facing when he hit, which way did he do this, which way, and you're freaking, right? Just fight the fish. It's only, you've got, on average, what, 15 seconds of just, if you can stay calm for 15, 20 seconds, way more are going to hit the net. And I think that's overarching. Like I said, I could bore you to tears with every mistake I've seen, and my own too. I'm not sitting here barking going this, you know, this guy or that guy. I'm just thinking of examples thereof. What else? Hell, well, while I'm on the tangent, you know, rod angle matters a lot. See, oh my goodness, I don't know if that was, I'm kind of looking at the question. Let's just go here. I literally open it. Paul from PA. Hey guys, love the podcast. I've lost my share of Musk. This is honest to goodness right after Jay. I'm not okay. Even so right after this guy's question, the next one, let me reopen it because I had to make sure I wasn't crazy. Like within here, we got Herb and Paul friends, who knows. I've lost my share of muskies over the years. When I watch the pros on YouTube hook a muskie, there's usually someone in the boat screaming to keep the rod tip low. For a chance at Steve's stash, in your opinion, does keeping the rod tip low give you a better chance at landing a muskie? Okay. I guess we're just doing it. I'm just going here. We're just talking about not losing fish, I guess. Okay. So, here's my thing. I've seen what I call the machine gunner stance quite a bit. Right, we do the pant splitters, we're getting down low, we got our legs spread out like crazy, we set the hook to the side and we're fighting the fish from the side in this low rod tip, right? I'm using the rod as leverage and keep my rod high. Okay, now here's my opinion on it. There's plenty of guys that'll fight them from the side. A lot of the guys that are fighting rod tip at the side, they're trying to land them lightning fast. Lightning fast. Just all pressure. All pressure. Right? For me, I'm keeping my rod tip angle elevated, and I'm taking advantage of the rod, because our rods have flex, and I'm letting the flex of the rod absorb all of that. Anytime the fish is fighting, the rod flex is doing its thing. If you're holding your rod down, if you have your rod tip, it's downward, right? If it's straight down in the water, the rod can't flex. The backbone's the other direction.
I think you're right. I think there's less of an, not acute, but there's less angle in the rod every time you try to get the rod tip down. And I think that's natural for people to do with musky fishing, because they believe if they hold the rod tip down, the fish isn't going to jump. That's what they're trying to prevent. But by doing that, you're holding the rod quite often
improperly
towards the musky enough that there is less rod tip and rod absorption in the fight. And you got to have, these long rods are exceptional for that. If the rod's up a little bit, chances are there's going to be more of an angle, right? Like you got that 45 degree angle going, and you know, that thing makes a surge, a head shake.
That's exactly where I'm going. So,
yep, go ahead.
Yeah. If you take your rod and you bend it backwards towards you, you're holding in your hand, the rod doesn't, when you build rods and rods are made, there's a backbone and there's certain ways that they flex to be able to do what they do, right? So that they bend far easier downward than they bend the other way, right? If it's a well-made rod, I'm sure you could go to Walmart and buy some $30 stick that'll go other direction. But if the rod actually has a backbone and it's, you know, there's a seam on these things. And that's what allows for the rods to load up, all this crap. the higher rod angle and the absorption of what the rod is there for, it's a snubber of force, can absorb those head shakes and absorb that. I want to absorb the force that's exerted back to me, opposed to the hot pressure, the hard pressure there. Because let's say the fish head shakes left to right and it doesn't have any snubber, any buffer of where that force can go. All it's going to do is open the holes up in its face.
Yep, exactly what
the
I was going
to say. The force has to end up somewhere.
Yep.
Right? It does. I don't have to call Dr. Bob to say, well, force doesn't just disappear. It has to dissipate. So what's going to dissipate the force that the fish is exerting on your terminal tackle and everything? Now, you know, if you're somewhere and they just keep jumping, I'm still good with a high rod angle. The bounce of the rod can absorb a lot of that, opposed to this down angle. Now, with the rod down and really low, if he jumps, once again, the rod, if we're holding it straight down at the water, when that fish jumps, yet again, there's less of a buffering and snubbing effect when it comes out of the water. So let's say it jumps high enough to put force on the rod tip yet again.
Mm-hmm.
What's it met with? No, nothing that can really absorb the force. So let's say the fish is going to jump 3 feet in the air, right? He's close enough that he's able to take that line and be, you see what I'm saying? At a certain point, there's just going to be, bam, it's going to be hard. It's going to hit the fish back, opposed to it can jump and it's loose. Now, with a rod angle up or elevated, I'm not saying above your head, but an elevated rod angle, if a fish jumps, he can still generate slack line, right? But you can get the tip higher and kind of point it at the fish. Now, the thing about this, jumping fish, are you can lose them. Because if they jump and they head shake, it happens.
It does happen.
If you can do it fast enough, I don't do it every time. I'm not ready for it. You can feel what, when you know, like when they're about to jump, you know it.
Yeah.
If you've done it enough. You try to point the rod at them if you can, but come on now. You know, sometimes it's just wham, and it just happens. But I'm letting the rod do its job. Your rod's job is to be able to load up and cast lures as well as absorb the shock from a fighting fish. So I want to take advantage of everything I have there. There's nothing wrong if you want to fight them with the right low rod angle. I'm just taking advantage of the tools I have in my arsenal and getting the most out of them, because if I compare one or the other, then this is it. In a direct comparison, do I want to have the elevated rod angle where I can take advantage of the snubbing effect of the rod, or do I want to fight them at a low angle and have less of that snubbing effect? It's not one that's right, one that's wrong. I prefer to take advantage of the rod tip because I feel I land a high, high, high percentage of fish in doing so. That's it. So, anyway.
Yep.
Jay just...
Yeah, and you said earlier, you talked about someone, you know, getting down in that position and rod tips down, and they are reeling in as fast as they can. They're horsing the fish in. I don't agree with that with musky fishing. I never have. I let the drag work. I back it off a little bit.
Yep.
And let the rod do its work. Like you said, you do not want that thing thrashing, especially when you get boat side.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even less stretch involved with everything. Mm-hmm. And tearing gaps with the hook. You're not going to probably straighten very many hooks. We've talked about this before. That happens in the net. It doesn't happen fighting the fish. But the problem is that thing moves, and those little sharp hook, they can tear a gap, and they can loosen up a little bit of gap in the hook, and that's when baits can come out. So proper tension on the fish, but without overexerting, is just absolutely key.
Yeah, that's the thing. And inevitably, that, and it's something, if you haven't thought about, there is a dynamic there, that is, there's an inevitability of the dynamic between you've put a hole in its face and you've applied pressure to the hole, right?
Yeah.
The only thing that's keeping it from backing out is the barb, the pressure and barb on the hook. As you're tearing on this thing's face, there's no other way to really put it. You've put a hole in its face. Now it's exerting pressure. You're exerting pressure. Guess what's happening? It's widening the hole where you hooked it. That's it. It's tearing at the flesh. And then if the fish is able to get any leverage and it's open enough, boom. How many times, I can't tell you the amount of times I've hit a big fish. Boom, got him. It's fighting. I'm keeping the pressure. I got in. It comes in the net. Boom, the lure's out.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, happens all the time. So just think of it that way. I mean, you know, you
don't. Yeah, I mean, I go with my program, man. I've lost very few fish over the years.
Very few.
I'm not boasting. It's just that's my approach. I always fight fish the same way when it comes to musky fish.
Yeah, that's same
works for me.
Oh my goodness, the beeps, Jay. Let's do one more here because the beeps won't end. Sorry, guys. Jordan W., what would be the best way to jig in a river, vertical or yo-yo? The way it's written, my apologies. What's the best way to jig in a river? Vertical or yo-yo a grub on a jig head back towards the boat? Okay, so should we vertically jig or should we cast out and yo-yo back? It's going to depend on current, right? So, you know, if you can't keep the bait vertical, then you're yo-yoing. You know what I'm saying? If you get too much of a drift on a Bondi, you're yo-yoing. I mean, you got to just look at the play. Now, which is going to be better? It's conditional. And it's also what the river looks like. I mean, if I'm in it, okay, for example, if I'm in a river that is, let's say 8 feet deep, gin clear, mm-hmm. I'm going to throw something out and yo-yo it. Because now, I mean, the chances of me spooking or that musky not eating because I'm vertically over him, my trolling motors are, you know, trolling motors 2 feet from his head. Okay, so I would rather yo-yo it. Now, I've caught fish doing that, right? So you can yo-yo it back, throw it. And if you don't know what yo-yoing is, you're throwing it. If you think you pop it up, let it fall, pop it up, let it fall, and work it back to the boat. Yeah. Very similar motion. You know, if I have room to vertical jig, I'll vertically jig. To be honest with you, yo-yoing takes less intensive boat control. And intensive boat control can be difficult in heavy current, right? You know, a lot of times with Bondi baits, you got to really match the current with your boat control. You really got to dial it in where, you know, you can't set the trolling motor to 4. It needs to be, at 4 1/4, and you're literally tweaking the knob or using your half speeds with your remote control, right, to keep things vertical because they present best when they're truly vertical, right? The action's better than things of that nature. But you can take advantage of, like, a similar action, the up and down motion of, like, a grub on a jig head a grub on a jig head would work, or some other, you know, concoction. You put a blade on whatever that makes it work. So that can play. Oh, we got one more in us, Jay. You got one more in it.
Oh,
let's see. Let me get a go on what I got. Freaking my phone. Phone rings one more time.
Darn phone.
Randy, thanks for all the help. Ball bearing swivel versus crane swivel. Where, when, why? Swivel's a swivel. I don't know. I mean, I like the ball bearing swivels just because of construction, right? Is the crane? Hold on, make sure. Let me. We get into this. I don't want to misspeak. Crane swivel. Make sure it's exactly what I think it is. I know what a crane swivel is. I just want to make sure. Okay, yes. So the crane swivels are where the metal's bent and it goes up inside like a hollow body. So what's happening in those? If you ever cut one apart, right? I tear everything up. It's like that video we did with the big rubber baits. And just tear everything up. See what's in. What's inside?
Do.
Yeah, I do. I want it. It's like how it's made. Musky baits. Tearing everything up. So a crane swivel is literally just a piece of metal that's bent at a right angle. And it's riding on the inside of the body. Right? And I would say in a not pull strength test, but overall test, like the barrel swivel is going to be stronger by and large, just a higher quality, like the ball bearing swivel. Application wise, I couldn't tell you. I don't think, I mean, I'm way down the rabbit hole on this stuff. I've yet to see anything where I'm like, okay, I have to have this versus that in the swivel. I'm just going for strength, and I'm typically going for ball bearing swivels. If you look at the musky shop leaders, I'm not lying when I say this, MIJ, that it's a ball bearing
Yeah,
okay.
They are. Yep.
I didn't know I'd be feet.
Yeah,
to
depending
the
on the size, you know, you go with a quality number four, number yeah. five ball bearing swivel. I've never
seen one fail. That's no, the like, but okay. And again, welded rings. They're way more solid than the crane swivel, which is essentially two right angles that are kind of resting in an open socket. You know, I would take a ball bearing swivel over a crane swivel just from a durability standpoint. I think crane, you know, just like your snaps could wear, your swivels. If you think about a crane swivel, because it is, there's so much there's friction that's taking place against two right angles in the internal surface. If you ran one long enough, you could wear that out.
Probably.
I think everything else would be bad before that. But, you know, in the hierarchy of things, I'm going with the ball bearing swivel just because of from durability and overall strength standpoint. Like, yet again, it's not the measured pull strength, but just, I don't think they're going to break. Application wise, I couldn't tell you of anything where I'm like, it must be this and it must be that. That's not something I'm going to go there. One more, why not? Jake, bait modding. I've been adding small spinner bait blades to my split rings on all my cranks and twitch baits for added flash the past few years. It's really up my catches on days where fish are lethargic and need something extra. Not a question, a statement, and I like it. So... a bait, I haven't seen them in a minute. You don't see them too terribly much, but I thought it was a hell of a design. And I didn't see it get really popular. There's a bait. It's from the Ty Sennett Baits, the Vexter. And it actually had a blade on the bottom. It's cool. Don't see them anymore. But it actually had a small, if I recall correctly, a small Colorado blade attached to the bottom of the body. So that blade would spin when it was floating up. So not only did you get the belly action, the bait moving, but you had this blade that was moving. Which, the more lethargic the fish are, the more little extra you got to give them, right? And adding blades to stuff is great. And if you go, hey, something that I like to do, I think I talked about it years back, but it doesn't matter. I'll cover it again. Something I've always enjoyed doing and had great results with is taking a small swivel. Now, you know what? Oh, my God, Jay, I'm an idiot. He goes, why would you use a crane swivel or a ball bearing swivel? And I'm sitting here, I got both. And then I literally sit here and go, well, son of a gun, I never grabbed the ball bearing swivels for bait mods because it doesn't matter. So I'm an idiot. That's what I use them for. I was trying to think, why do I have them both? If I'll use like the cheap crane swivels for exactly this, of adding blades to stuff and non-fancy stuff. So my apologies. I was thinking more of a leader standpoint. But I don't care if I'm just putting a dozer blade or a trailer blade or something on a bait. So that would be my choice for my application. Crane swivels for actual fish applications, fighting a fish, connecting a fish. You can use the cheap crane swivels for that. That's what I do. You know, you take your crane bait, you take your slammer. You can easily add a belly weight with a split or belly blade to any of those baits for the float up to the middle hook or the back hook or wherever you want it.
Or, yeah, I mean, some good winter project, you can mess around with anything with a soft tail, take the tail off and make a little concoction with a, you know, small Colorado blade or some kind of crazy little willow or something.
And when I say
something different.
Yeah, and when I say small, I'm usually using like little walleye size blades. Yeah. Right? You're not going to you're not putting a double 10 on a shallow raider. Yeah. Right. No, the bait, somebody's writing Booker an email right now. My bait doesn't run anymore. Could you send me a picture? There's a freaking Colorado number 10 in the middle.
That'll do it.
Yeah, but a little walleye blade will do you wonders. Now, what's cool though with that, with your cranks, is you can just split ring a small crane swivel on there with the blade attached with your split ring. And just, you don't, you know, you could heat shrink it straight down, but I leave it free hanging. So like when you're cranking, it'll kind of smack on the bait, and when it's floating up, it's spinning. So you go whack, 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 and that spins on the float up, which is cool. Anyway, my goodness, Jay, we're rambling, dambling. I'm shutting my eyes, Jay. I'm moving my mouse back and forth on my the mouse on my computer, Jay. Tell me when. Count it
Go
down.
Ahead now. Oh, I see you're picking.
Count
it
down.
3, 2, 1, do it.
Open eyes. Who is it?
I don't know.
Mike, who asked, what are your top 5 tips for fishing a small clear lake? There I got you go. Your email. Mike, and he, listen, he's the guy that asked how do you trick the wife and kids. The way you trick them in is, well, I'll send you some cool baits, and I actually, you know what, I will send in some what I would call busky size baits for you to take the kids out with. There you go.
Very nice.
Pounders, double 12s. Kids will love them, Jay.
Well, torture them.
Huh? Torture those kids with double dogs. Anyway, Mike, send me an email. I'll get something out to you here from Steve Stash. Let's do it again next week. Send in your questions. We're covering a lot of ground here. I like that. Right? Yeah. We get into season. It gets really specified, right? I'm fishing XYZ lake and they're not hitting this. I like these overarching things to get everybody's brain right for the upcoming stuff you guys are about to be doing there. So send them in your hypotheticals, your theoreticals, your diureticals, whatever it is. Send them in. We'll do Steve Stash again next week. Jaybird.
Yeah, Steve.
Say guten Tag.
Night, guys.
Later.
Thank you.